The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's good to be with you. We will have Kurt Warner at some point here in the next few minutes. I want to have Kurt on. He has his celebrity game night benefiting Treasure House. It's great work that he and Brenda Warner do there. That's on February 22nd. That's my birthday. I'm not going. Should I start the interview with that? Like, I'm not going to your charity event because I am going to be a year older, or is it worth going? Eric, what do you think? Should I open it up that way? Is that just kind of taking the air out of Kurt's event?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much taking the air out of it, but it's your show.
Well, then I won't do it.
You can do what you want.
It's at Hangar 1 in Scottsdale. Kurt will also have his ultimate football experience. Kurt's movie is going to come out on December 18th. He and Brenda are co-producing it, the American underdog Kurt Warner story. December 18th is about when Star Wars comes out, though. I'm thinking that might not be the best spot for him. And obviously, everybody wants to know who's going to play Kurt and who's going to play Brenda. I want to talk to him about Fitz as an NBA owner, Kurt's son at Brophy, the quarterback, some early thoughts on the draft with Joe Burrow and Tua and Herbert and Kyler Murray. Other than that, I have nothing to talk to Kurt Warner about. So there's the interview. Thanks for playing. Devin Henry is chairman of the board today. So we'll have Kurt and then Jimmy Vaccaro. And then Josh Weinfuss is going to be with us. So Josh is, to me, Josh, as I've gotten to know him a little bit, and I look at his space, nobody in the market, and this is not any shot towards anybody else that covers the Cardinals, but nobody has the reach that Josh Weinfuss has. Nobody works for ESPN in town on a print side, except for Josh Weinfuss, who covers the Cardinals. So he is the one that reaches the most people. It's not AZ Cardinals, not the Arizona Republic. When Pedro Gomez shows up or Josina Anderson shows up and they need some info, is he willing to share? We're going to go through the process of covering the NFL and how he got to where he is. Kind of a media podcast. And then also just what's going on with the team behind the scenes. You know, like the future of David Johnson to me looks bleak in Arizona. So I will talk with Josh about that. He's going to be in studio with us. Opening comments brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. And that is with life insurance. I was sitting with a guy yesterday, and this guy is in his mid-40s, and he was talking to me about where he is in life. And he said, I know you do some life insurance work. Do you mind if I give you my information and you just take a look at it? It's fine. I have my license, right? I don't go around bragging about it. It's just something I have in my back pocket, and I'm willing to help people out. He also left a job recently, so he had a 401k that was sitting in a previous job that he hadn't rolled over. Well, financially, that 401k is just sitting there. So protect what matters most, and you can do it with life insurance, but other products as well. That is with Sagicor. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Go to Sagicor Now. That is Sagicor Now. They have great products. Kurt Warner here momentarily. So there's a story about Mark Grace and Jeremy Roenick tied together. It's actually two separate stories. I'm tying them together. Both of them are Valley residents. Both of them are very popular in their own space. Mark Grace is going to do color analyst work for the Chicago Cubs this season and do the Arizona Diamondbacks. This is according to Chicago, media in Chicago. So the Cubs are starting a new network. And for Mark, I've got to talk to him. We have to have him on this. How is this exactly going to work? Is it when the Diamondbacks are not at home and he's not doing the pre and the post game show for Fox Sports Arizona? Is he then going to go on the road wherever the Cubs are, if they're in Chicago, or if they're on the road, and is that where he's going to be in the broadcast booth? And is this the start of a slow exit for Mark Grace from Arizona? It's really interesting. I don't know too many analysts that do it for both. Eric, do you know of any? I know we're waiting for Kurt, but do you know of anybody that would do two teams? Like, I get going
I've
to
never,
do the Wednesday.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
Never heard of that.
Like the Wednesday night game of the week or the Saturday game of the week, I understand bouncing out of the booth. I understand that. But so this is one of the things where Mark Grace. And then there's Jeremy Roenick. Jeremy Roenick announced yesterday that he is not returning to NBC. And so JR was very apologetic. There was an incident with NBC. And so Jeremy Roenick is now not doing hockey for NBC. So interesting stories there on both fronts. Well, Jimmy Vaccaro in Vegas shortly, South Point Casino Resort, as we talk about the XFL, the buzz around the Raiders' arrival, March Madness. It's always good to have Jimmy on board and then Josh Weinfuss in studio, ESPN.com. Again, I don't think there's anybody with more reach in the terms of the local market than the guy that's at ESPN.com. Pleasure now to be joined by Kurt Warner, the Hall of Famer. Kurt has his celebrity game night February 22nd in Hangar 1 in Scottsdale, benefiting Treasure House, which, as long as I've known Kurt, has been a big passion play for he and his wife, Brenda. He also has this ultimate football experience, from my understanding. I was talking to Jake Plummer about that recently. That is in March. December 18th, he has a movie coming out. His son is playing quarterback at Brophy. His other son is playing college football. Other than that, you've got nothing going on.
Exactly. Yeah. Not much going on. But, hey, all great stuff. That's the cool thing, is that I'm at the stage in my life where I get to do what I love to do, whether it's coaching or chasing kids or raising money to impact people. It's all awesome stuff, and I count myself blessed to be able to do it and still feel I'm young enough to run after a lot of those things, so I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah, you're also chasing grandkids, right?
I am. I got a couple of those as well.
Yeah.
But that's all pleasure right there. I mean, that is so great. As everybody says, it's better than having kids, which I didn't think that was possible. But yeah, it's pretty darn close. It's fun. I got a 2-year-old and a 1-year-old, and just watching them grow up and change every day is a blast.
You're still coaching a Brophy? You going to do that again?
I am. My son's a sophomore now. Got a couple more years, so the plan is to coach at least through his time there, and then I'll figure out the next steps at that point. But I started with my other son, as you mentioned. It's in college now at Nebraska. When he started playing in high school, I started coaching, and I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed that extra time with my kids and being able to connect with their friends and being able to teach young men not only the game but about life through the game. And so I have enjoyed it, and so planning on at least a couple more years, and then we'll see.
Yeah, good for him. I mean, Kurt worked with Keaton Slovis. We were talking about Keaton last year at USC, and you worked with him at Desert Mountain, and I was at a couple Brophy games, and you're totally into it. Your son looks like he's got a bright future in front of him at the quarterback position, and so it's cool that you're mentoring on that front. I'm wanting to get into what you're doing on February 22nd, just going down the laundry list, so that fans, if they're interested, this is about Luis Gonzalez on one hand, then the other hand, the bigger picture is it's Treasure House. What are you doing on that night?
Yeah, so the 22nd is our third annual celebrity game night, and so really what it is, it's just a fun fundraiser. You know, at my house, family get-togethers is all about playing games and interacting, and so people of all ages and all of us can get together and we laugh and we create memories. And so we decided to make it into a fundraiser. And so on the 22nd, we're going to be celebrating Luis Gonzalez, as you mentioned, but really just about when we say celebrating him, he's going to be there, and we love to bring attention to other guys in the area that are impacting people and the community is important to them. And so, but it's really just about playing games and interacting with the fans and the audience and, you know, all the while making some money for Treasure House, which is our community living facility in Glendale for young adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Been open almost about a year and a half now, and we're only got 5 more spots before it's full. And our goal is to model that, figure it out, and then kind of bottle it up and take it around the country to impact other families like ours. And other young men and women like our son, Zach. And it's going great, and we're loving it. And so that event is all about raising money and awareness for what we're doing with Treasure House and those families and that population of our community that we're so passionate about and we believe needs a voice. And so if anybody wants to come out and join us, go to treasurehouse.org/game night, and you can get tickets. And come join us. You'll have a good time. It's fast moving. It's different than most fundraisers, where it's just kind of a dinner and a program. We're gonna have some fun. We're gonna bring some audience members up to play games. We're gonna win some prizes. We're gonna raise some money. And you know, it's been we've got great response over the first 2 years,
yeah.
And we've already made more money through sponsorships this year than we have the other years at this point. So we haven't even walked in the door yet. So we are so grateful to all those that I found out about it and are sponsoring it and bringing something to the table and helping us impact people's lives.
Do you play Battleship, Monopoly, Operation? Is it like Ellen's Game?
I think those are a little too slow paced.
Yeah, Yahtzee.
It's hard enough to put it into a couple hours anyways. Those are a little too slow paced. But every year we kind of change it up. So we've done Price is Right before. Family Feud may be coming in this year. We do some interactive games. We do some different trivia so everybody in the audience can be involved. So we just kind of bounce around to different things. So every year it's a little bit different. In what we do and what we get access to. But I think every year's been a good change-up, and it's been fun.
Hall of Famer Kurt Warner with us. Okay, let's get over to the movie because that's what people have been asking me about with you quite a bit. And December 18th, this is finally coming to fruition. I think it's something that has been talked about. I don't know if we've kicked it around when I've seen you or asked you about it, that eventually a movie would be made. How did this happen?
Well, yeah, we've been in the process for a number of years now, yeah. You know, with different people and different studios and different writers. And the bottom line is, as we started this process, for us, it was more about doing it right than it was doing it. You know, to me, it wasn't worth just trying to get a movie on the big screen if it didn't tell the real story and didn't have the message that we wanted to share and the impact that we thought it could have. And so we've gone through a number of different people because nobody's just really got our vision and really been able to you know, put their finger on exactly what the story is we want to tell. But, you know, just recently, you know, working with the Irwin brothers and Lionsgate, you know, we got a script maybe about a month ago, and it was it felt really, really good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not complete yet. We've still got some things we want to do, and we sat down and we're massaging a lot of stuff. But it felt really good. And after talking to Lionsgate about what they were thinking, the vision of the movie and all of that, and where the script was, we all kind of came to the point where we're like, we're ready to move forward. We're ready to, you know, take those next steps. Now, did I expect it to happen all the, you know, in December? No, not necessarily. But yeah. I think that's the excitement that everybody has for the project and when they think it, you know, would do the best, you know, at Christmas time where it's about inspirational family movies. And that's what we believe this movie can be. I know a lot of people will see it as a football movie, but it's not necessarily a football movie, more of a inspirational encouragement throughout the movie and, you know, story between my wife and myself and our family and the journey. And so there's going to be a lot of things covered in the movie that we're extremely excited about. And so, you know, never going to count my chickens before the hatch because we've been a part of this process. But obviously when a studio gets behind it like Lionsgate
yep.
has and says, hey, this is our date. This is what we're shooting for. We want it to be a holiday Christmas movie, which is one of the, you know, the big movie release times of the year. We're extremely excited about it. And, you know, we can't wait to keep moving with the process and being involved. And, you know, and we believe we're going to get it right. And it's going to impact a lot of people.
It'll be faith-based, right, Kurt? I mean, that's you.
Yeah, I mean, inspiration, that's always going to be an underlying yeah. theme in yeah. everything that we do. You know, what that looks like on the big screen, you know, we're still kind of determining that. And so, but bottom line is there will always be Christian undertones in everything we do. And the storylines that feed throughout the movie will definitely be based on our faith because that's who we are and that's what's driven us through this entire journey. And so that will be there. What that looks like, I don't know, but I believe at the same time it will speak to the masses, whether you're, you know, a faith-based person or not. I believe the movie will connect and speak to those people alike, and that's really what we want. We want a far-reaching movie that anybody can go to and they can leave, you know, empowered and inspired to go and chase whatever it is that they want to chase in life.
Yeah, the other side of this is everybody wants to speculate who's going to play you, who's going to play your wife, who's going to play Fitz, who's going to, you know, assuming Larry's in there or other teammates.
Right.
Have you guys gotten to that point, casting?
No, not at all. I mean, first of all, I'm not an expert in any of those areas. And so, you know, a lot of it comes down to as we fine-tune this, what's the range of the movie? Like you said, that's been one of the big things in the past is we've had so many different people that say there could be so many different parts to this movie. You know, there's the first act, there's the second act,
yep.
there's, you know, the early eight. I mean, there's so much that goes into it. And so that becomes a part of that process. And then you have to figure out, okay, what actors, you know, play that, you know, do you want a star to play it or do you want an unknown to play it? Like I was an unknown guy that kind of came into his own. So there's a lot of pieces that go into that. I'm not really involved in that because I don't know a lot of the current actors and what they do. My wife is much more of a TV buff, a movie buff. And so as we were meeting with the writers just last week, yeah, she was throwing out all kinds of names. Hey, have you thought about this person? Have you thought about that person? And they were actually making calls on the spot with different people at the time to see if they're available as they, you know, try to put this together. So I don't know where it will end up. I think the biggest concern is to make sure that the female role can do the different hairstyles that my wife had. I think that's the key to the whole movie. But, you know, again, it's going to be fun, and they're going to get it right. That's what these guys do. But yeah, my wife has definitely jumped into that process because I guess she does watch a lot and has different people that she likes on different shows.
A couple other questions. Kurt Warner's Celebrity Game Night is February 22nd at Hangar 1 in Scottsdale, benefiting Treasure House. We appreciate the time with the Hall of Fame quarterback. How do you think Fitz is going to be as an NBA owner?
I think Fitz will be a great owner. I have a feeling he's going to stay in the background a little bit more when it comes to some of the things. You know Fitz. I mean, Fitz, he's such a positive guy and an upbeat guy that I don't know how he would fit into that role where he would have to, you know, come in and make changes and do that. You know, I think he's going to be great, though, just because of all the value that he can bring as a professional athlete, as a guy that's been successful, that understands how to carry himself, the image in which, you know, he portrays and has portrayed throughout his career. He just quality person. And I think anytime you get a quality person involved in anything, it's a benefit to an organization. And again, I don't know exactly what his role is going to be, but I think he's going to be a huge asset to the organization and to that team in a lot of different capacities.
Have you been approached about ownership yet? Because usually what happens is Hall of Fame guy, quarterback, a lot of things going on. They get approached about ownership and then they have to make a decision. It doesn't matter what sport. I've just seen it through 30 years of doing this. Have you had that happen yet?
Yeah, I have not had that happen yet. You know, with all the different things I have my hand in, you know, I think it would always be intriguing, you know, to be involved on that side of it. You know, you have people ask you all the time, you know, general managers and those kinds of things.
Sure.
You know, I don't really know. I mean, right now I'm at a point where I like the things that I do. I like the freedom I have. I like to be able to chase my kids around. But again, you also want to have value. And, you know, I believe whether it's, you know, coaching or front office or even ownership, that you believe you can bring value to an organization and a sports franchise after having been where I've been and done what I've done. I don't really know what the future has in store. You know, I like where I'm at right now, and I'm enjoying every day of it. And as things come across your desk, you take a look at them and you weigh the odds and you see what that looks like moving forward. And I'm going to continue to do that as different opportunities come my way.
About a minute and a half left in this segment. Early thoughts on this draft class at quarterback. Have you dove into it enough to see Tua and Herbert and Burrow and your NFL cap on for a minute?
Yeah, I mean, I'm starting to dive in a little bit as the combine comes around. I'm really set on that. I love Joe Burrow and what he did. I like Tua as well. Those two guys, to me, have separated themselves at the top. I don't really know where I go from there. You know, everybody else seems to have limitations from that point on. And so, you know, I was just texting with Daniel Jeremiah, our kind of expert in that field of the network, just about that this morning, because, you know, I said, I got my top two, but beyond that, I'm not really sure how I would rank these guys because there are a bunch of limitations and nobody really jumps out at you in terms of having, you know, the whole, you know, everything that you want to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. So I'll watch a little bit more as we go and even more as we get to the draft. But right now I got Joe Burrow number one, Tua. I like him at number two, obviously, with the health factor. And then everybody else is kind of mixed together after that.
Appreciate your time and insight as always. Thanks.
All right, buddy. Talk to you later.
Take care. There's Kurt Warner with us. Celebrity Game Night, February 22nd. That will be at Hangar 1 in Scottsdale at benefiting Treasure House. Jimmy Vaccaro is next from Vegas. And then we'll have Josh Weinfuss in studio. Stay with us. So we're 3 weeks away from Vegas becoming the epicenter for all these college basketball tournaments. Eric and I are going to be up there for the WAC with Grand Canyon, with the PAC, with ASU and U of A. I don't know if any of these three schools in state are going to go anywhere. I just know that going to Vegas in March is something that you should start planning for. Pitchers and catchers reported down here yesterday with 13 teams. I'm already looking to March Madness. Also, the XFL, the buzz around that, and the arrival of the Raiders. We figured let's put Jimmy Vaccaro on because there's plenty to go over with Jimmy at South Point Casino Resort as he finished up the Super Bowl. He's had a week or two to recover. And now you're looking at the XFL. Are people betting on XFL? How did that do the first weekend? Because the numbers weren't bad on television, Jimmy.
Well, my friend, it's obvious that it was a good Super Bowl for us here in Nevada. Everything went well, and now we're leading into the college buildup for the March Madness, which is insane. And the one you hit on was I was pleasantly surprised. The XFL did more than I thought it would, and it drew two-way attention once we moved the numbers around a little bit. So I would think that it's better off than I thought it would be going into week two. And now we adjusted a few things, but like I said, my friend, the bottom line is people showed up and they bet them. Maybe not for a lot of money, but they were interested and they sat and they watched the entire game.
Okay, so a team like, let's go college basketball. So every year at South Point, San Diego State stays there. That I've seen, because the Mountain West Conference tournament is there. And it's pretty cool because the bands are there and everybody's excited. You have a team that is undefeated, Jimmy. I think they're 25-0 now. As the buildup to March Madness comes, what does an undefeated team do at the window?
Well, what it does for us, and I've been one of these people pushing, thinking what I think is the best way to do it. Having a San Diego State or having a Dayton, you know, taking a lot of the spotlight, it turns a lot of business because people are saying, wow, I wouldn't even think of San Diego State being 25-0. And Dayton wasn't even ranked. We had them in the field. So if you wanted to bet on Dayton, you had to take the whole field. So it shows you that the interest in college basketball is good. And more importantly, my friend, it's like there are so many good teams anymore. You can't say like this team is or this conference is going to dominate because these kids are getting so good. And that's great for the books because it does churn interest. So, and having the team there, I think we'll have a little fun with it. And hopefully you can be there with them.
The Raiders, what's it doing in Vegas? It's coming. What's
crazy.
It doing? Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy. Everybody's talking already. You know, the draft thing, they had Goodell on the other day, and everybody was talking about the Bellagio fountains and boats and whatever, and the police are saying, you know, nobody can go on vacation. It's only because it's the NFL and it's here, and yes, I can't tell you the feedback already we're getting. They're building the practice facility. The new stadium is absolutely gorgeous. When you see what they're up to when you get here, you'll be incredibly surprised on how far that they are. So forget everything else. Raiders, even now, the commercials are 3 and 4 times a day, and we got 6 or 7 months before they play a game yet.
Yeah, yeah, that's going to be something else. All right, Jimmy, appreciate it as always. Thanks.
All right, buddy.
There's Jimmy Vaccaro there in Vegas, South Point Casino Resort Sports Marketing Director. I've got a couple minutes here before we get to Josh Weinfuss in studio. The Mel Tucker story. So I want to go back on a rant that we had a few weeks back when Arizona State lost their defensive line coach to Oklahoma. And then they lost their defensive coordinator to Syracuse. If you're one of those fans that is just a straight Arizona State fan, this may mean nothing to you, but it really should, okay? What happened at Colorado is only going to continue to happen. And it's an opportunity. If ASU cannot capitalize on everything that is lined up right now in front of them, I don't think they're going to be able to ever capitalize. UCLA was not ranked in the top 75 in recruiting classes. Not that I'm all recruiting class ranking, you guys know that, but it is a metric to be aware of. USC was ranked 52nd. And so when you've got what Herm is doing over here in trying to attract players, this is the time, obviously, to do it. They went into Southern California. They brought in as many players, or almost as many players, as the Oregon Ducks did. So they're getting their foothold in there for sure. Now Colorado, a program that made some progress under Mel Tucker, he bolts after the first year. He bolts. Why did he bolt? Because the Big Ten just walked in and said, we will triple your salary for assistant coaches. We will double your salary for you to come here. Because in the Big Ten, they have $53 million in revenue. $53 million. The Pac-12, 25, 26, if they're lucky, it's half. And so we're starting to really see this become the JV against the varsity. You may not like hearing that, but it's a fact. When you can go out in the Big Ten and the SEC and just throw money around like it doesn't matter, and you're sitting over here and you're U of A and you're ASU and you're trying to compete and you can't do it, the Mel Tucker story leaving Colorado. And if Eric Bieniemy is the next head coach there, and that would be a smart hire, in my opinion, how long is he going to be there until, if he proves it, someone else is going to come along and say, we're going to double, we're going to triple your money. And so enjoy it while you can, ASU. Enjoy it while you can, Pac-12, if you've got a team that's up to near the top, because the problem with the conference is mega deep. In basketball, it's Gonzaga and San Diego State as number one seeds. Not one Pac-12 team is going to be a number one seed. Now, I'm not sitting here hating. It's just a fact if you look at where this conference is right now. It's a mess. Josh Weinfuss is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. So I wanted to bring Josh Weinfuss in for a few minutes to talk about what his process is. And if you don't know the name, you should. Here's the thing. Nobody has a bigger reach. Not AZ Cardinals, not AZ Central, not The Athletic. Nobody has a bigger reach than this guy who's sitting here next to me in studio, because he does work at ESPN. He's been there for a while. He covers the Arizona Cardinals inside and out. We were talking one day. I was like, why have I not asked Josh to come in studio? So I appreciate you showing up. I'm glad you dressed up.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. You look ready to go. It's fine.
It's the off season, right?
That's right. That's right. There is an off season. There's an off season, right?
Yeah, it's finally here. Yeah.
All right. So how many years now covering the Cardinals for ESPN.com?
It'll be 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 will be my eighth season covering the Cardinals for ESPN. And then 2012, I worked for the teams. I covered them. Then.
How many years does it feel like?
It feels like 10, 15. Like, it feels like it's been a long time. Like, it's wild. I was thinking about this the other day, and, you know, looking back on 2013 seems so long ago, and the NFC Championship game run back in 15 seems like forever ago. So it's really been, it feels like much longer than it's been, but, I mean, 8 years, it's almost a decade covering one team. It's kind of wild.
Yeah, and when a team doesn't win, it's work.
Yeah.
When they win, it's easy,
yes. Right?
Like, just walk me through that statement.
It's actually more fun to cover a team, in my opinion, that's bad. Because there's more storylines. There's more.
Well, that's true.
There's more happening.
Is this guy going to get fired? Is that guy getting fired? Right. Is this guy going to get cut?
Right. People aren't happy. You know, you're kind of wondering what's going on. How do you fix it? Like in 15, when they were great and they were scoring 35, 40 points a game, literally it was the same story almost every game that they'd put up 30-plus points. Carson Palmer throws for 400 yards. Larry has 100 and whatever. The defense played great. It almost got old after a while. It was kind of like, when do we get to the playoffs so I can start writing about this playoff run? But this year, especially last year, or I guess 2 seasons ago now with Steve Wilks, that was one of the most fun seasons I've had covering a team, because they were so bad. There's so much to write about. There's so much intrigue from the opposite direction. You know, obviously when they're good, people are paying attention because they're great.
Right.
They're putting up crazy numbers. But when they're bad, people are like, what's happening? And there's more behind the scenes stuff to dig into. You're kind of, you know, there's obviously a lot of on-field stuff to look into. But yeah, I have more fun covering a bad team than I do a good team.
What do the numbers look like? Does it matter to you? And when I say numbers, for those of you in the process of this, and that's what this segment's about, is how many people watch it, read it?
Right.
Is there a number you've got to hit every day? Is it in the back of your mind?
So there's not a number we have to hit every day or every week or every month. We try to just write stories that will resonate on a national level, because the way that – so what I write for is NFL Nation at ESPN. So we have one person – starting 2013, we hired one person for every team.
Mm-hmm.
And our audience is a national audience. So I have to write stories that resonate with people in
– Buffalo.
Buffalo, Miami, Nashville, Chicago. People – it has to be something that people
Boise.
Are going to
–
Exactly.
Middle of nowhere, right?
Right. And – the day-to-day, what's going to happen with the second string right tackle doesn't resonate with people in those places. So I have to go out and dig and find good stories, human interest stories. I mean, it's no secret. If you look at how we do things now, it's very different than how we did things 3-4 years ago. I was writing 5 to 7 stories a day about everything. And they slowly realized that there's just too much content.
Less is more.
Less is more. So now it's quality over quantity, and obviously quality was always a factor, but now it's like, let's go find those really good bigger stories and focus on those. And we've been doing that for about 2 years now, and it's, you can see the readership improve. Mm-hmm. Because there's you know, we put a lot of planning into it. We put a lot of resources into our stories now, more so than we did a couple of years ago. And the results are definitely coming in.
The process then, you see the story, you go to an editor, or do you have complete, total control over what you send? Yeah. Walk me through that.
Totally. So I come up with an idea, or if they come up with an idea, I go to my editor and I say, hey, I want to do this. We kind of plan a good time for it to run. And then basically from there, it's up to me to get the, you know, interviews done, do the reporting, do the writing, and have it in by my deadline. And then there's at least 2 to 3 layers of editing per story.
Do you have a main editor that you work with all the time? Who is it?
His name's Chris Grandstaff. He is based in California in the Bay Area. So I work with him on a daily basis. And then there's a layer of editors above him, and then above them. And then it's kind of the executive level at ESPN. So he handles my day-to-day questions, my day-to-day line editing, stuff like that, planning. And then, you know, he obviously has to go report to his editors. But yeah, I go to him. I say, hey, let's do this story. Or he'll come to me and say, what about this? We come up with ideas. Try to plan out as much as we can. And then I just go out and I do all the reporting. I do all the phone calls, all the research. Mm-hmm. And then I sit down and start writing.
How do you get out of the rut of, I know Fitz's story is going to do well. I know a Cliff or Kyler story is going to do well. Backup tight end story, as you said earlier, that's not what you chase, but you do come across those stories of human interest that may resonate. So how do you go about that process of, I'm going to put something out that's going to really blow up versus this is going to do really well with a different segment?
Yeah. So the one thing that we've been talking about a lot lately is, you know, good stories are good stories.
Yep.
And if I can find a good story, regardless of who it's about, because like you said, you're 100% right. The Fitz stories blow up, the Kyler stories, yeah. The Cliff stories. You know, Patrick Peterson, when Tyrann Mathieu was here, Chandler Jones, people read about those guys because they're stars.
David Johnson.
Right. David Johnson, huge. I mean, right. Anything I read about David Johnson just blows up because there's a lot of intrigue in him as a player, obviously coming off of that 2016 season and what's happened since, but there's a lot of fantasy intrigue.
Yep.
So there's a huge amount of attention paid to him. But, you know, then I'll go and if I find another story, like I did a story on Justin Pugh, the guard.
Yep.
He has a stake in a pizza place back in New Jersey. I mean, it's an offensive lineman.
Yep.
People generally don't care about these guys, but story's a good little story, and it resonated, you know, pretty well. Got some pretty good numbers, and people enjoyed it. So you find those little human interest stories, and people will read them.
What happens when you do a story that you're like, man, this is going to do well, and it doesn't?
You just kind of...
You let it go?
You let it go. I mean, it's kind of like the old adage, you got to move on to the next play, because I can't... During the season, it's such a grind, and it's such, you know, every week's basically the same thing over and over for 17 straight weeks that I don't really have time to sit and wallow in my, you know, in a failure, if you will, you know, story that doesn't do as well as we thought it would. Just kind of like, okay, next time we know what not to do or what to do better, and mm-hmm. we just move on to the next one.
When you do a story that is not going to sit well with PR or management, how does that play out for you?
I don't really get a lot of feedback from anybody on the team side, so I just, you know, it's my job. I need to report the truth, and when they're playing bad, I write that they're playing bad, and when they're good playing well, I write that they're playing well, and if someone doesn't like it, it's out of my control.
Have you ever had someone come down the hall and say, well, why did you write this, and get into you, or your life a little more difficult to get your job done?
No one's directly said that to me. I think, you know, there have been comments maybe in passing. I've had players actually say it more than anybody in the front office of the Cardinals. Players that, you know, were unhappy if I, you know, tweeted something or wrote something. It's interesting because what has mostly happened are guys coming to me and saying, why didn't you tell me this was coming? And I said, you know what? You're 100% right. You're 100% correct. So I have learned, you know, if I have a certain type of relationship with a player, I can say, hey, this is coming out, just a heads up. I mean, the last thing you want to do is blindside a guy. Like, I'm not in this business to, you know, to take people down or anything like that. You know, I write what I'm told to write or what I see. So from that standpoint, yeah, I mean, that really, you know, hit home. Happened about 3-4 years ago, and I was like, you know, that's a good point. So now something happens like that, I always, you know, shoot a guy, you know, a message or just tell him in person, say, hey, this is what's coming down, just so you know. And if you don't like it, I'm sorry, but this is, you know,
it's the way it is.
The way it is.
Josh Weinfuss is with us in studio. He covers the Cardinals for ESPN and ESPN Sports Nation. I want to go back on how you got into the business. Mm-hmm. Who was there a teacher? Was there a moment? Was it your upbringing? What got you into the interest of writing?
Yeah, so it was actually my parents. So I grew up in Minnesota, and my dad brought home, we had the Minneapolis Star Tribune.
Sid Hartman.
His column every Sunday was a must read. I mean, I read it every single word every Sunday.
Sure.
But we had it delivered every day, and then my dad would bring home the USA Today from work, and I devoured it, absolutely devoured it. And my parents...
Green section, purple section, red section, yeah. All of them.
Red section was sports, green section was money, purple was life, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my parents noticed back, I think I was 10 years old, when the first attack on the World Trade Center happened. I was sitting in front of the TV watching all the coverage and writing my own reports. Mm. And they were like, okay, we might be onto something here. And I was a sportsaholic. I mean, I played everything growing up, started focusing on basketball in junior high and high school. But I always wanted to write. So they really, you know, stoked that flame in me. They really, you know, they allowed me to, you know, read books that were way above my reading or what I should be reading at the time. Newspapers. They got me a Sports Illustrated for Kids subscription.
Yep.
And I hated it. I wanted to read my dad. So he would read the big SI, as I called it, and then I would take it and I would read it cover to cover.
Except the swimsuit edition.
I stole that one. They didn't give it to me. I stole that one. But Steve Rushen in the back page. I mean, those are guys I grew up reading.
Yeah.
And then, junior high, I started writing for my junior high paper. High school, started writing it. I was a, sophomore through senior year high school. So sophomore year, started writing for my high school paper. And then basically picked my college, went to Indiana, and picked it because of their school of journalism. Mm. And started writing for them as a freshman. And then, kind of climbed that ladder up there. Ended up being the editor-in-chief one summer. And then covering the men's basketball team, which in the sports department is kind of like the highest honor you can get. A sports editor as well. And then I became a pro, basically.
Your first job in the business was?
It was as a Pulliam Fellow at the Arizona Republic, actually. So I came out here for like 5 months, 6 months after college. Interned at the Republic, and then my first full-time job was in Panama City Beach, Florida, writing for the News Herald, about a 30,000 circulation paper.
Covering
high schools, community stuff, some junior college. They had really, really good junior college men's and women's basketball there, so I covered that. And then I was the Florida Gators football beat writer from a distance. They were about 4 hours from Gainesville. So I covered a few home games, went to the national championship when it was out here against Ohio State. This is a Tim Tebow, Urban Meyer time. But I was so far away, we didn't do the daily coverage, so more like big picture pieces. But yeah, just kind of cut my teeth there. And, if it wasn't for that job, I probably wouldn't be the guy or the writer I am now, because my editor there sat me down one time. His name was Pat McCann, and he flat out said, he's like, if you don't fix this, you're not going to have a future in this industry. And it was, I was writing too long. He's like, cut every sentence in half.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, and it changed everything. And I just read, my mom always liked to say, I wrote like, a New York Times writer, just long, long paragraphs, repeat myself constantly. And he really fixed that. He got me out of that habit. And I mean, it's paid off in the long run.
How did ESPN come to be for you?
Yeah. So, it was summer of 2013, and they were starting NFL Nation. And I had a contact there, and I, basically reached out. I had a question for him, and he just said, hey, send me your resume. And I did, and the process took about 8 weeks. Interviews, phone interviews, in-person interviews, just a lot of waiting.
What'd they want to know? Because you can look at, I would think, in a writer's space, here's my work.
Right.
But if you're on the phone, what is it they wanted to know about you? Just you? Process?
Both. They wanted to know how I'd handle certain situations. I think the biggest question for me at the time was going from the team website, because I was writing for azcardinals.com, the team website, going to covering the team. They wanted to know if I could do that.
Mm.
And I...
Were you too close to the situation?
Yes. Too close. How would coaches handle it? How would the players? How would the front office handle it?
Makes sense.
Yeah, totally. And I answered the questions, obviously, to the best of my ability, and it worked. And I had a lot of... That was 2013, so about 9 years into my career. No, I'm sorry, 8 years. And I had enough to show them before I went to work for the team website that, hey, like, I could do this. And I had references vouched for me and all that stuff. So, about it. It was an 8-week process, and I got hired right before the 2013 season.
Okay, one last question on this, and then we'll take a break, and that is, you've heard the gloom and doom of the industry. I've heard the gloom and doom of the industry. I don't look at the industry and say gloom and doom. I think it's just the fear of the unknown and reinventing yourself. You've reinvented yourself from the way that it sounds. I think I've done some reinventing here.
Absolutely.
We're still passionate about what we do. But what would you say to a younger college person now or a high schooler that was you sitting in front of the TV about getting into this industry now?
I think too many people put too much of an emphasis on the medium, whether it's writing for a newspaper or writing for a website or having a podcast or whatever. It's stories are stories, and you need to get into this business to tell good stories and factually correct stories. And I think if you can come into this business, no matter what you do or what your medium is, and have that foundation of being a reporter, of being a really good reporter, so you can tell those stories, you're going to be just fine. You know, you might not, you know, you might have to start somewhere small, might not make a lot of money. I mean, my first job out of college, I was making like $29,000 a year.
Yeah, I was making $8 an hour for shows on Christmas Day. It's what you do.
It's what you do, right?
Yeah, it's nights, weekends, and holidays. Totally. That's the way that it is.
Totally. I remember for years, I would fly home the night before Thanksgiving to back to Minnesota from Florida when I was at my first job to spend Thanksgiving with my family, and I would fly back first flight Friday morning so I can cover a holiday basketball tournament.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just had to do it.
Yep.
I missed weddings. I missed funerals. I miss everything. It's what you do. And if you love it, you stick with it. And for me, it paid off. But yeah, I mean, you got to have that foundation of being a reporter. And I think that's where going to a small market really helps, because you can cut your teeth. You can make mistakes, and they're not on a national level. You know, too many people want to rush that process and get to somewhere big right away. But, you know, being somewhere small and figuring out how to do it is perfectly fine. And it's actually great for your career, for your skill set. And then you go on to do whatever you do from there. But, you know, being a good reporter and then, you know, always knowing there are stories everywhere. I like to tell kids when I talk to them in classes, everyone has a story.
Yep.
Someone, you know, some stories are better than others. There's no doubt about it.
Some books are thin. Some books are thick.
Exactly.
That's how I put
it. But everyone has a story.
Yeah.
So if you can find it, you can get them to trust you enough to tell you this story, you're in good shape.
Josh Weinfuss in studio with us. We'll take a break. We're going to put his reporter's hat on about the Cardinals after this timeout. In studio with Josh Weinfuss, ESPN Sports Nation, covering the Arizona Cardinals. All right, so the offseason, the laundry list seems pretty straightforward. Will David Johnson be here? Let's go with that one first. What do you think?
I honestly think he gets traded. I don't think they're going to release him. His $10.2 million salary for 2020 is fully guaranteed. So that's a lot of money to just kind of just waste on the guy, you know, just to get rid of him. I think if they do part ways, it'll be through a trade. I would not be surprised if he gets reunited with Bruce Arians in Tampa. We all saw the success he had under Bruce. But if he does stay here, I can see him transitioning to be more of a receiver than a running back. He's not the same runner that he was back in 2016 when he had that huge year. So I think there's a lot of factors that go into that. But I think if he does stay, it'll end up being his receiver. But my gut tells me they move him to at some point.
So at running back, Kenyon Drake.
I don't think it's going to be Kenyon Drake either. I think he's going to command too much on the open market. You know, he hits free agency middle of March. And I just don't see the Cardinals ponying up that type of money for him after what they just went through with David Johnson, giving him, you know, 3-year, I think $32 million were guaranteed. It's a lot of cash for somebody who wasn't productive, and I think that gives any organization a little bit of pause. But at the same time, this team's done things somewhat not traditional over the last 10 years, so you never know.
Okay, so then break down running back. It can't just be Chase Edmonds.
No, they're going to have to either. I know. It's wild. I mean, you go from having a, you know, three-headed monster to possibly a one-headed monster, on the at least guys on the roster. So I would anticipate that being a huge priority for them in free agency. Maybe get a guy in the draft that they can kind of use. But, you know, the running back is such a crucial part of this offense. When Cliff Kingsbury was hired a little over a year ago, everyone wanted to talk air raid. Mm-hmm. But yet they conveniently ignore the fact that he loved to run the ball. You know, because he's from the Mike Leach, you know, coaching tree, everyone's assumed he was going to throw the ball 70, 80 times a game, which we all know isn't possible in the NFL. I mean, in college, he ran the ball 40%. people, you know, he had a 1,500-yard rusher and a 1,000-yard rusher at Texas Tech. Why wouldn't he keep doing that, you know, in the NFL, which he did this past year? So they need to find a reliable running back, or at least a committee of running backs that he can rotate in there at any given moment.
Eighth pick overall today, if you're making it, where are you going?
Receiver. I am. You know, I think that, you know, Larry Fitzgerald obviously is going to be 37 in August. We don't know. We have this conversation every year. We don't know how much longer he's going to play.
Sure.
You know, I think Christian Kirk is very, very good when he's healthy. You know, he said after the season that, you know, his ankle was a major factor this year for him. Couldn't get the speed he wanted, the cutting he wanted. Obviously, he had the broken foot as a rookie. So, you know, I think you need to find someone who can be a clear-cut number one option. They need somebody who can make the big play at any given moment, especially with a quarterback as dynamic and as talented as Kyler Murray. You need to give him the tools around him.
Jerry Jeudy. Yeah. Hello, Jerry Jeudy on line one with the eighth pick in the NFL draft. Right. Arizona Cardinals.
Absolutely.
Saying Jerry Jeudy.
I think he'd be a great fit. CeeDee Lamb would be a great fit. Yeah. You know, he has the relationship with Kyler already, so you'd just kind of be hitting the ground running with those two. So, yeah, I would go with the receiver at number eight.
Flipping around to the defensive side of the football, and Patrick Peterson. What happens?
I think at this point that they keep him. He has 1 year left on his contract. I think if anything, they try to negotiate some sort of extension, because he's going to be a 30-year-old cornerback on the open market, and I think that number scares off a lot of people, even though he's still in great shape. He obviously didn't play very well last year. I think a lot of it had to do with coming, you know, back after the 6-game suspension. He didn't have the chance to kind of get into the type of game shape that he normally is able to during with a full training camp, but I would expect them to keep him at this point, unless they can get just some crazy offer for him in a trade. I don't see them parting ways.
What concerns you most when you look at this team versus what concerns them most when you're covering the team?
Yeah, I think when I look at this team, when I look at this roster, this defense is not cut out to carry this team, and I think that you need, at the rate that the Cardinals are going to score, you can't let teams keep pace with you. Mm-hmm. You know, this team could put up a lot of points very quickly, and I think we saw that at the end of last year. We saw everything start to click. The proverbial light bulb turned on for this offense, and they really understood what they were doing. Now I think it turns into, you need a defense that can suppress offenses. And one major issue in 19 that I saw was, you know, you lose two guys on your defensive line during training camp, and you don't replace either one of them. So you had basically limited push up front. Well, when your only pass rush is coming from essentially one side in Chandler Jones, that's two other areas, the other side and up front, that you're not putting any pressure on the quarterback. So you need to have, you know, two, at least another capable pass rusher on the opposite end of the line, opposite of Chandler Jones, and you need to have that push up front to make the quarterback move. You can't just let him sit in the pocket and step up. So if you can get that this year, I think this defense changes dramatically.
What did you make out of Cliff Kingsbury in year one? Was he better than you thought? Was he about what you thought? What do you think about year two with him that's going to change?
Yeah, I think the one thing that I was impressed with Cliff Kingsbury in year one was his ability to adapt. I think in that situation, most other coaches who come in with their system, which he tried that first month and obviously did not work, they would stick with it. They'd say, guys, we are going to make this work.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know what? It doesn't work. Let me adapt. And he, you know, he saw things that weren't conducive to his college style offense. You know, there were issues with, you know, the hash marks, with speed. You know, he's in college, you're not playing against guys who are incredible athletes all over the field, maybe one or two or three. And obviously there were issues with the roster. He didn't, he's working with 8-9 receivers in college. Here he has 4 or 5 that he can run with. 46 guys active on game day compared to 85 to 100 in college. So there's a lot of things that he had to figure out how to work with, and he just adapted. And that was very impressive to me to see how he did that. And in year two, I think he's going to take everything he learned in year one and just continue to build on that. I think we're going to see a lot of what happens next season is going to be very similar to what happened with Bruce Arians in 2013 to 14. It took him a little bit, you know, a little while in 13 to get that offense going, and then they just hit the ground running. You know, I don't know if they have the talent that they did those years coming up, but I think Cliff Kingsbury has it figured out. I think he's just going to continue to learn, but I think the most important part to him being successful in the NFL, which I think will happen, is his ability to adapt and adjust and be okay with that, accept it.
Appreciate you coming in studio. Good stuff.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Josh Weinfuss with us in studio. Devin Henry's our chairman of the board. Eric Sorensen, senior executive vice president of nothing or everything, depending on the day and my mood. We're going to head over now and work on our TV show over on Fox Sports Arizona. Also on the website, there's plenty of content. Pro College, High School, Arizona, Arizona-centric at sports360az.com. Have a great day.